This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we're joined by Paul Tucker, state representative from Salem here on MSO News Sports. And Paul, first of all, welcome back.
Great. Thank you, Bill. Good to be back. And shout out to all the listeners. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, the new session is underway at the State House. And committee update. What committees are you on here in 2017?
Well, I'm very pleased to announce that I was able to receive from the Speaker all of the assignments that I asked for. I've been assigned to the Ways and Means Committee, which is basically the budget committee and has oversight over a tremendous amount of the work that we do. I'm very happy to say that I've been reappointed to the Judiciary Committee, the Education Committee, and the Public Safety Homeland Security Committee, all great interests of mine, and I'm really looking forward to getting down to work and getting into the committee work and trying to get some good bills passed.
Yeah, those are great committees to be on. What is the story with the budget? Do you know what the budget story is right now? I mean, it's usually some number starts floating out around now.
Yes, right now we have received what's referred to as House 1. That's the first budget we look at. It comes to the House. It's Governor Baker's budget. It's somewhere around $40 billion. It's about a 3% increase over last year. And the House really gets down into the weeds on the budget. We look at it. We come up with our own version. We work with the governor as much as we can. And then sometimes there's some differences that we have to work out. Obviously, we're always looking at what the revenue picture is. We're hopeful that that's going to come up a little bit. We had a few down months last year. And frankly, one of the most difficult things that I find on the job is making sure that we're able to take care of the people that need help. There is no bad advocacy that comes in, whether it's autism services, developmental disabilities. Those folks came in the other day. We want to make sure that we give as much resources to them as they need while balancing everybody else's needs.
Yeah, certainly in that position, everybody makes a great case, and you can't say yes to that number, across the board.
Yeah, if we had the magic wand, we'd be able to help everybody. And these are some of the difficult decisions that go on that maybe a lot of people, I don't say that they don't appreciate it, but maybe they don't see it every day. When these advocates come in, and they're great organizations, oftentimes it can be very difficult to try to satisfy all the needs. I know that we're looking at a few things in the budget this year, some of the line items. One of them is a thing called Turning 22, where many people with autism and developmental disabilities lose a whole array of services, and it goes down to what can the parents or family members pull together. We need to do a better job, and that's just one example.
Yeah. Well, we as opioids were a big issue last year, and a lot of significant legislation passed. You're telling me a moment ago that criminal justice reform is going to be big this year. And by the way, we'll get to the opioid issue in just a moment. But tell me about how you see criminal justice reform playing out this year, or how is it playing out now?
There was a report that just came out the other day. It was prepared by a group called the Council on State Government, and they were enlisted by the legislature and the governor to put together a package of potential criminal justice reform. We do a very good job in Massachusetts, but we could do better. So some of the things that they're looking at is mandatory minimum sentences for so-called nonviolent drug offenders. We're looking at solitary confinement and the use of it by the Department of Correction. There's so many issues around sentencing and reform. We're looking at enhancing some penalties and also giving people the opportunity in many cases to be able to have their records either sealed or expunged. Because what we're finding is it's difficult when people get out. They're trying to find a job. One of the things we did last year, we repealed a law that took the driver's license away from drug offenders. What we're finding is people are getting out of the jail, they're paying a debt to society, and they couldn't find a job because they couldn't drive. So we fixed that. We're looking at a whole array of criminal justice reform, much of it around juveniles. We're looking at the studies that talk about brain development into the early 20s. Last term, we moved up the age of juvenile up to 17, which previously had been an adult. Much different way of approaching the handling of young nonviolent offenders. Frankly, the crime rate has gone down. We've done a good job. We incarcerate now somewhere around 1,300 less people than we have over the last couple of years. We're going in the right direction, but I think it's very certain that we can do better.
Yeah. Is there any particular area there? You reeled off a lot of different areas there, but is there one that is kind of hits home more with you, or do you think will have a major impact on this?
I think sentencing reform is going to be big. There's a great move, not only statewide but nationwide, into community-based corrections. And that's the use of GPS, of bracelet monitoring, stronger probation programs, community-based corrections. We know that it's somewhere higher than $50,000 a year to hold somebody in one of our facilities. We can do that for about 10% in the community. Now, I'm also a law enforcement guy. I want to make sure that we're protecting society as well, and that it's the right persons that we're taking on the street as they pay their debt to society, because clearly there's still a need for the corrections department. But I think we can do a better job of making sure that we give people opportunities, because at some point, 90%+ of the people that we're incarcerating are getting out. They'll be released. I've seen a documentary where somebody was released directly from solitary confinement to the street. That person's percentage of success is very, very low. That was not a Massachusetts case, but I think it's instructive for some of the things that we're looking at doing.
And one more follow-up from me on that to you would be, is that being a former chief of police here in Salem, is that, and why I remember having this conversation with Kevin Coppinger back in the fall when he's running for sheriff as a police officer in Lynn, chief of police in Lynn, is that the police, in this case you, in the past, know the community. They know everybody. They know the points of, where all the social issues are, to be honest with you. But you're a policeman. You're not, social scientist or whatever. But you have that expertise that I think a lot of folks really may not realize to the magnitude of the information that you guys have.
It's incredible what the local police do. And some people say it's outside of policing. I like to think, and I'm very proud of the record that we had, of knowing the community. We're at that point where when people need help, if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and their burner goes out, they're calling the police, and we're helping. So it is a bit of a social service job that we do. I was very proud of the work that we did in Salem, opening up a building called On Point. Social services, English second languages, scared straight programs for juveniles, all run with the Plummer Home for Boys and the police department. And some people would say to me, well, that's not really law enforcement. My answer is, actually, it is. Because if we're working with the community, we're building trust. Those are kids that we may not have to deal with later. And we're also building trust within the community. I think the Boston area gets it. If you look nationwide at many of the issues and unrest that police departments have had to deal with around social issues and justice issues, we haven't seen those in Boston and Salem or Peabody or Beverly, and that's not by accident. It's because we build up that trust ahead of time. So when something does happen, we have trust in the community, and it's a two-way street.
Yeah, exactly. And when those things were unraveling a couple of summers ago or whatever or other, it was hard for some of us to understand that piece, to understand where that was. But now we do. So it's kind of an education piece, which will transition us into education to the education committee. And your focus or your belief of the focus of the education committee at the House, State House, will be what this year?
I think in the education piece, there's two parts to it, one local and one national. We've heard from a number of people that are concerned with the national administration's view on education, particularly with the appointment of Betsy DeVos. I'm not taking a position on her appointment, but there is some concern, particularly among educators, that she has some predispositions toward charter schools and different things, which we know did not pass last year, which took up a lot of the energy around education. So this year, Speaker DeLeo has been clear. Our mission is to work very, very strongly on early childhood ed. And we are looking at some programs. We're looking at partnering with the local business community. So many studies have shown, and it's incredible data, that the amount of work that educators do around early education and that early development, ages 3, 4, 5, 6, it carries with that person into adulthood. And if you miss that time period, there's really no going back and rewinding that clock. So that's going to be a focus. We're always looking to improve what we're doing. I just saw Secretary Pizer just put out some information last week. Massachusetts continues to be number one in the nation in terms of education, in terms of achievement. And if Massachusetts were a country, we'd be in the top five internationally of what our students are doing. I think that's a record to be proud of.
But we're not succeeding, are we? We're not. Or, you know, we're not leaving.
We no. And there's always work to do. And there's always the so-called achievement gap. We want to make sure that some of the students that may be underperforming, we need to do everything we can to bring those children up. One of the programs that actually has been championed by one of our school committee members, Dr. Brendan Walsh, locally is the parent-child home program, where you may have single mom or single dad has some children. Some may be at home pre-K. We're funding the ability to send some tutors and some reading folks in, and it's getting dramatically positive results. So that's just one example of some of the things that I need. We need to build upon the successes that we've had.
Yeah. We're talking with Paul Tucker, state representative from the city of Salem. Paul, last year, the opioid issue was front and center, and there was a significant legislation passed by the House and Senate, signed by the governor. And yet you look at some of the news headlines in the last month or so, and the statistics don't look good. In other words, they're either getting worse or staying the same. They're not getting better. Now, of course, I don't blame that on the legislation, of course. But yet, on the other hand, it's kind of discouraging, isn't it?
Yes, I'm very distressed, Bill, by the numbers. If we look at pure statistics, the amount of overdose fatalities is increasing. And you pointed out the legislation that we passed last year. We were very proud of that. And I think that we, again, became a model for the country, but still is clearly not enough. This scourge of fentanyl, it's a bill that I actually worked on with my colleague Tim Whalen from down the Cape. We got that passed. I delivered my maiden speech on it, and I just saw a couple of people had sent me news clips. Two men from Lawrence were just convicted on the strength of the bill that we passed on this fentanyl bill. That's actually what's causing a lot of the fatalities. I'm still concerned that there's not enough in terms of on-demand treatment. That's a goal we've got to get to. We've got to get early education. We have a tremendous amount of work to do. And this is a problem. I call it the all-hands-on-deck approach. This is everyone. This is cutting across every demographic, every line, and we've got to do a much, much better job. My counterpart here in Salem, Senator Lovely, she's done terrific work around mental health and substance abuse, and I expect that she'll continue to lead the way as well.
Well, I know you were a supporter of the new sheriff, Kevin Coppinger, former police chief, city of Lynn, and you've also visited some other sheriffs and facilities. Give us an update on that piece and how you see Essex County kind of a correctional center fitting in and this whole issue kind of, you know, being dealt with at that level.
I'm very pleased at the job that Sheriff Coppinger has done so far, and I think it's only going to get better. I've had the privilege to be on his transition team, so I've seen firsthand some of the things that he's doing. Kevin is going to take a fantastic approach, a proactive approach in terms of programming and treatment. The job of the county sheriff has changed so much, and I give Sheriff Frank Cousins quite a bit of credit. He really was a trailblazer over the last 20 years, and now Sheriff Coppinger has taken that mantle and moved ahead. Last Friday, I also took a tour of the Middlesex County facility with Sheriff Peter Katusian. Sheriff Katusian, I can't say enough about the work that he's doing. We took a tour, and we looked through every corner of his facility. We met with some of the inmates. We talked with them firsthand. We met with the sheriff's staff. Some of the things they're doing in terms of bringing down the recidivism rate, one thing in particular that they're very proud of, and I was privileged to be a part of it, was the veterans wing. There are a number of veterans being held at the Middlesex Sheriff. Some are awaiting trial, and some are serving time. They have their own wing in the facility, and the recidivism rate and the bonding that's taking place is really going in the right direction. I think that's a model for what other corrections professionals can do. They also took us into a wing where they allow some of the inmates to use these tablets, looks like iPads. They're doing programming on it. There's some rehabilitation programming. Some are doing some educational credits. These are the kinds of things. The job of the sheriff has really transformed into treatment, education, and I think most importantly, preparing these men and women to succeed when they do hit the street. And I think we're going to see some great, great things over the next 5 years in that direction as well.
All right. I'm going to mention a term to you, Paul. That's Sanctuary City. Now, Sanctuary City is making news nationally. It's making news in Salem. I think a lot of folks are familiar with some of those stories. But it's also making news now at the State House, or being discussed at the State House. So kind of put that into some kind of context for us.
Sure. Let's begin locally. Salem, one of our city councilors, Dave Epley, has worked with a committee that we have called the No Place for Hate. And they have put together what I think is an excellent proposal for an ordinance. It's a sanctuary for peace. One of the things that I would caution the listeners to is there are many versions of these so-called sanctuary cities, some such as San Francisco. They're very robust and very strong. Some on the other end of the scope are more in the resolution type. Salem's, I think, strikes a very good balance. We've had two public events. One was at the city council meeting where I spoke in support of the ordinance. The other night, we had an overflow crowd at the House of Seven Gables, people listening to Mayor Driscoll, Boston City Councilor Josh Zakim, who was the author of the Boston Trust Act, and Jim Cody, who is a selectman in the town of Newton. So we're having these robust debates. On March 30th, there'll be another event at Salem High School with the Salem City Council. This is giving people an opportunity, and I think one of the important things to understand is what this ordinance does, and equally as important, what it does not do. I actually received a phone call from someone asking if Salem was a safe haven for criminals, that if somebody made it here, if they couldn't be arrested. That couldn't be further from the truth. There is still some cooperation. Basically, it reiterates what our values are, that nobody will be denied city services because of their country of origin. And then if you look at the state level bill, we intend to have a robust debate at the state. The state version, in my estimation, goes a little bit further than Salem. We're looking at several pieces of it. And I would also caution, what often looks like a law at the beginning, when it makes its way through the committee process, it's a product of compromise. And I think that one of the strengths that we have in particular in the Massachusetts legislature is working together. It's, people ask me, it's not like D.C. at all. We work very closely with the Senate, the governor. The Democratic Party works very closely with the Republican counterparts. So I'm interested to see how far we will get with the state version of the Trust or Sanctuary Act.
Gotcha. All right, Representative Tucker, anything else you want to share with us at this point?
I'm excited. This is the 190th biennium of the Massachusetts legislature. We've been around an awful long time, and I take it as a high privilege to occupy the seat that I do in the chamber. And I look up, two of the murals on the wall depict scenes from Salem from the 1600s. So that always gives me a little inspiration, and it really is a pleasure to serve the citizens of Salem and try to make a difference for the folks in the Commonwealth. And I'm very excited. This is it's almost like the first day of school again. You're getting to get excited at the beginning of each session, and that's where I am.
There you go. Right back. Got back to school clothes on and everything for you. All right. All right. All right, Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bill. Good to see you.
State Representative Paul Tucker with us here from City of Salem. I'm Bill Newell on MSO News Sports.